You're listening to Sideshow Network.
Why didn't they laugh?
You suck!
That's not funny.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? I will be covering episode 3 of South Park today. It was awesome. And there's some really cool stuff that happened in it. It opens up with
the brave Olympic gold medalist from Denmark, Freja Olengard. Freja, you've talked about being trolled on the internet and its consequences.
Yes, Heidi. I believe trolling has a tragic effect on innocent people.
Okay, so what happens in this scene is this woman is a breast cancer survivor from Denmark, and she's getting trolled by Kyle's dad. And no one knows it's Kyle's dad. That's a running storyline of the plot. And I never understood why she was from Denmark until later in the episode. But so then Stan's dad, the cops come to his door and they're like,
"Hello, sir. We're conducting an investigation regarding what?
Do you happen to know this child?"
"Oh, sure. That's one of my son's friends."
"Well, I'm afraid he's quit Twitter."
"Oh, another one, huh?"
"Yeah, but this one's different. The events surrounding his quitting Twitter were very suspicious. Most people that quit Twitter leave at least 3 paragraphs stating that they're quitting Twitter before they quit Twitter. This child just stopped using it."
"Kyle!"
"We're simply trying to gather information on whether this was a Twitter suicide or Twitter homicide."
Okay, so Eric Cartman gets... All the kids break Eric Cartman's stuff, and so he leaves Twitter, and the cops come to Stan's house and ask Stan's dad, Gerald, who's scared that that they caught him for being a troll, if he's seen Eric Cartman's Twitter. The running theme of this season is hyperbole, where it's like, if someone dies on Twitter, they die in real life. That's kind of the running theme, and it's hilarious, because they're like, "Why don't you ask Eric where he went?" And they're like, "At where? At where?" The name of the episode is The Damned. So now he's one of the damned. He's walking through the hall as if no one knows him or sees him. And the only other person that sees him is the girl that originally quit Twitter. So they start hanging out at a local park. And it's like right out of a horror movie. Like, no one can really see them. Like, couples... You know, like, yuppie couples are driving by with their phones and they're like, "Look at these kids, Marsha. It's like they're lost." And then the irony is they all look down at their phones. And one of the running themes of that is that they're the only ones that aren't lost. Like, Eric, by the end of the episode, is about to see this chick's pussy. But the political stuff is really good. All right, just check out this scene.
"He's going to do whatever he can to try and mess with your head. Don't buy into it. Whatever he says, just respond with, 'My opponent is a liar and he cannot be trusted.'"
"Got it."
Decision 2016. The first presidential debate with moderator Lester Holt.
By the way, I have no idea how they can do this. They did this. This came out a day after the debates and they nailed it. I don't know if they just... like, assumed this was going to happen, but it's exactly what happened. Like, Trump was trying to, I don't know if he was trying to, but he sounded all over the place. I mean, he said that we got hacked by a 400-pound hacker. And Hillary was responding with all her like, robotic shit. It's like, that's just, that her biggest downfall is that she won't be in the moment. And some people say that sex is, because she prepared... you're going to criticize her because she's prepared. Oh, because she's a woman. No, it's like laughable watching her bomb jokes where she's like, "Trumped up, trickle down," and no one laughs or cares. And it's like all she has to do is just be herself and she would win. Like, watch this scene. These dudes are, they nail it. Listen to this.
"Okay, let's get right into it. Our first question is for you, sir. How will you deal with ground troops in Syria?"
"Everyone, I need to just speak from the heart here. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I've got to come clean. I, I had no idea I would get this far, but the fact of the matter is, I should not be president. Okay? I will fuck this country up beyond repair. I am a sick, angry little man. Please, if you care at all about the future of our country, vote for her, okay? She's the one who at least has some experience. She's not as bad as you think, I promise. And unlike me, she's actually capable of running this country.
My opponent is a liar and he cannot be trusted.
No!
Oh my God, she is such a turd sandwich.
What he is saying is simply not true. Do not believe it.
I am giving you this, lady. I am giving you this. What the fuck are you doing? Okay, look, just vote for her. She knows politics. She really wants to put this country first.
My opponent is a liar.
Would you just please shut
and
up?
And he cannot be.
Get out of your own way.
Cannot be trusted.
Okay, look. She doesn't mean what she's saying. She just doesn't know how to take this because it's very weird and her advisor's probably...
My opponent is a liar and cannot be trusted.
Fuck. Oh, fuck. Why the fuck did it have to be her? I am so fucked.
Yeah, I mean, that is... If they called that, they're just prophetic. I mean, Trey Parker and Matt Stone are so goddamn good at human nature. It's like no one's even close, in my opinion. And, because it's true. It's like she can't just respond. And then it has Trump at his own rally. Listen to this. Yeah.
I have no idea how to be president. I am a complete jackass, and I have made a giant mistake here. No. Why are you clapping? I am not a good person for the White House. I am not a good person, period.
Finally, someone who doesn't talk like a politician.
I am peeing my pants at the thought of being president, okay? No, shut up. Listen to me. You don't want a guy like me in the White House. You don't even want to know the shit I've done. I have scissored with another woman when I had a sex change.
He's so honest.
No.
I mean, it's just brilliant. That's exactly what it is. It's like he can't fuck up. Like, no matter what he says, he can't possibly fuck up. Like, because what he's doing is he's going against politics as usual, is kind of the whole thing. Like, his appeal is that he doesn't sound like a president because people hate the president because they know the president steals and lies from them. And so right now the country is in this weird death spiral because everyone's voting against what they hate versus what they like. And there's a really powerful scene with Stan and his dad about why does life suck now?
Everything's upside down. Everyone's taking sides and splitting into groups. Everything sucks.
Yeah, everything sucks. Everyone's divided. Nobody's getting along. And there's people like your mother who are thinking about voting for a douche because she doesn't have a brain.
Go to hell, Randy!
I don't know what's wrong with people in this town. More and more are agreeing with your mother. I try getting on community message boards and swaying people's minds, but it always ends up with some asshole talking about vaginas and photoshopping a dick in my mouth.
Yeah, so that's what I love about South Park is they'll call out when society just sucks. And right now it does suck. It's like everybody sucks. And then so Stan's dad, he goes on this kind of quest where he starts watching more and more of the Trump character. And then he's like, you know what? He does speak from the heart. And then he goes back to the original people that were for him. And he's like, I kind of like the douche now. And they're like, no, he'd be terrible for the country. Like, everyone keeps going back and forth because no one knows what the right answer is. Do you go with a robot or a child, you know? And that's the spot we're in. But it'll be fine. You know, nothing will really change. But I thought that the Denmark stuff, the reason I brought up Denmark earlier was, so, spoiler alert, and I really mean that, I don't want to spoil anything for you. So the Danish chick dies that Kyle's dad keeps attacking. Hang on. Oh, no. I lost my spot. Now I have to watch commercials. All right, so I'll just describe it. So in the very beginning, Kyle's dad, Skank Hunter, or Skank Hunt, is making fun of this woman with breast cancer because he's a troll. And she ends up killing herself. And then the Danish president comes on, and he's like, the only way to kill a troll is to call it by its name. And then it dawned on me, I'm pretty sure they're doing references to Beowulf, because Beowulf was the original poem ever. And there was, I think his name was Grendel, was the troll in that. And I think that's why they said it in Scandinavia, why the Scandinavians are going to be hunting the troll, who is Kyle's dad. Because Beowulf is set in Denmark, and the troll Grendel gets killed, and then Grendel's mother and the dragon. It's like this whole long epic story. And I think that's going to be a metaphor for the show, is Beowulf. But the interesting thing about what's happening in politics is, like, everyone kept criticizing Trump for interrupting Hillary. But I heard a great Radio Lab this year about this one, I don't know if it was inner city, but it was an underprivileged black school that actually won the national debates. Like, they beat Princeton and Harvard and all these insane schools. And the method they used was just talking over the person no matter what they said. It's a really cool episode. I can't remember what it's called. But let's say you're debating capital punishment, and one person proposes, I propose that capital punishment is immoral. And this inner city black school would just start being like, I am here because of systematic oppression, blah, blah, blah. And they just wouldn't stop talking. And it would literally just make it so that the other person couldn't debate. They just froze it. And it was kind of brilliant. As I'm listening to this, I'm like, wow, they figured out a way to take down this giant. Like, it was a David and Goliath story, just by not participating in the debate. They just would cut off. You know, and you'd have these kids from Yale and stuff, and they're like prepared. And the black kids would just not even engage in logic at all. It would just be yelling. And they did it for hours. At one point they just played the audio, and it was just hours of just ranting about their problems as black teens. And that's not even engaging in the system at all. And the takeaway was the brilliance of it. And so then, but see, this is the problem I have with politics. And I took that away. I was like, oh, okay. This is the problem that I have with binary thinking of, like, left and right, is the left will see that as a win. You know, it's like, wow, look at what these kids overcame. And I can see that as well. But then you also can't say the opposite when the right does it. Like, Donald Trump uses a very similar tactic, where if Hillary starts talking, he just talks over her. He steamrolls her. And that is what I don't like, and maybe I'm wrong. I don't like hypocrisy. I don't like when someone establishes a rule and then they just change the rule based on whether or not they can use the rule. And the right was always much more guilty of that than the left, historically. The right was always the party of the rich, and they would, you know, establish a rule, and then, you know, the Koch brothers and all these guys would just absolutely change the system to fit their needs. This is the first year, the last 2 years is the first time I've ever really, it's dawned on me that the left is now the party of the rich. And when the Koch brothers are not endorsing Donald Trump, you know something's up. Like, that dude has managed to worm his way into the voice of the working class. And I think that the party, okay, when it comes to Mexicans, everyone's like, oh, he wants to build a wall. The country is divided in two camps. Those who see Mexicans as servants and those who see Mexicans as competition. And Trump supporters typically see Mexicans as competition. You know, I do like labor when I'm not on the road. Like, my brother's a lumberjack, and I help him, you know, cut down trees and pull trees and drag brush and chip it and sharpen his chainsaw. Like, I do that job. I know what that is. And if you're getting $25 an hour and you know that there's a bunch of Mexicans coming that'll do it for $5 an hour, that's terrifying. if you worked at a plant that moved to Mexico, you have a, you like, don't like Mexicans, and it takes effort to not become racist. And like, I've had twinges of that. Everyone's had twinges of that. All races have had, it's that's why I love the Star Wars metaphor of the dark side. It's not about race. It's about established. It's how established is someone, white, black, Mexican, doesn't matter. A fifth generation Mexican in Los Angeles that bought land in like the 40s is just as, if not more conservative than a white person in the same situation. There is no race. Race is invented. Let's just put that out there. But there is us and them mentalities of like, I have something that someone else wants. And those are where the lines start getting drawn. And it takes effort to know that it's not a race. It's not a nationality. It's not a religion. It's not a gender. Sometimes I get frustrated with fat people. And I've learned to get better at that. I've learned that corn syrup is poison to a lot of people's metabolisms. But like, I would look at a fat person and say, you don't think I want to eat all the brownies? Like, you don't think it takes effort? Like, I want so bad to eat all the brownies. The brownies come out, I want to eat all of them every time. And then I want to sit. And it's the same way with racism and bigotry. I'm like, you don't think I want to just say the Mexicans are coming, the Muslims are coming? It makes your life so much easier to just pick a group and say, I can't get hard because of the NSA. I feel like they're watching me, so that's why I have boner problems. Like, that's weak. It's the same with Mexicans aren't, it's not Mexicans. It's just people that need jobs are willing to work for less. And that, it used to be the Irish. It was the Italians. It was Catholics got it bad, you know, up until Kennedy, even after Kennedy. Everyone thought that the Pope was the leader of his own nation, and that the Catholics would respond more to the Pope than their own government. People think this internment camp shit, or like this idea of like keeping groups of people out of the country, is new. We've never had more freedom ever. Like, people didn't want to let Catholics in because they thought in times of war they would take their orders from the church and not the state. And that lasted up until, I don't know, the 90s, up until the pedophile scandals pretty much took down the Catholic Church, because before that they were very, very powerful. So my point is, I don't think like online, which I'm starting to realize just makes people autistic. And I'm not saying that to mock autism or anything. It's true. Like, so a lot of times autism is someone can only take the literal meaning of words. Like, let's say you say knock, knock. Like, sometimes an autistic kid would be like, there is no door. Why are you knocking? Because autism doesn't take into account context, nuance, body language. Sometimes people can be face blind. They can be all kinds of communication blindnesses. And just like in the movie Rain Man, that can be an advantage because you can see through bullshit really easily. It's almost like the idiot savant is the character in drama or comedy. Like, my character on Sullivan and Son had a little touch of that. Like, he was so out there and appeared so dumb, but in the crucial moments I would know the right thing, because dumb is a subjective term. And if I would see the world literally, I could see through the madness in times of high emotion. That's when autism is good, when it's like when people are in high emotion. Like, for example, this presidential race, I would be very interested to hear what people with certain types of autism had to say, because they would probably be able to look through it and see that they'd be like, I'm voting for this person because of my income category. Like, they don't even think like, oh, the poor children in Syria, or like, talk to me about Benghazi, bitch. Like, that doesn't even register. They're like, four people died in Benghazi. 1.2 million have died from drone strikes since 2012. Like, I think most comedians have a touch of that, because that's the only way we can write jokes, is we see through the emotion of things. And then that in turn causes the emotion of laughter. But anyway, I was having this conversation with someone about race and racism, and I had something to say, and they were like, what would you possibly have to say as a white person? Like, it's like, bitch, I don't want to hear your white tears or whatever the fuck people say. And I was like, so a white skinned person can't contribute. And I know I bang this bell to death, and I won't go down this road too far. But my point is, I think an outside perspective on everything is valuable. Like, I think, like, an honest and empathetic look at why people may want to keep Muslims out or Mexicans out helps people understand how to get past it. That it isn't just pure hatred. Like, I think just like a lot of working class white people who have lost their jobs or are scared of losing their jobs. And by the way, a lot of people who lose their jobs, like, they're fucked. Like, they have children. They don't have options. They can't ask mom and dad for money. So a lot of these people have this fear that these people are going to come and rape their wives and take their jobs. And it's a very scary thought. And that's where it comes from. They say that war is fought out of hate. I think war is fought out of love that's been perverted into hate, where you love your country, your family, and your friends so much and your livelihood so much that any threat to that is turned into just hate. And I don't think either side is listening to the other. I don't think if someone understands the fear of the outsider, they can understand how to get past it. You know, like I can only be thin-ish. I say ish because, you know, I could lose 10. But because I know I want the brownies. I know I'm dying for the brownies. If I didn't admit that to myself, I would be fat. Because I would just become the guy who eats the brownies. I know I want the brownies. I like sit here and I'm like, I want to make brownies right now and get a gallon of milk and dip them in the milk and eat them. I will do that all day long. But I don't want to be that person, so I have to know that. I don't want, like, Syrian refugees coming to America. I don't want Mexicans coming to America out of fear. And then when you get past that fear, you're like, no, I do. The Syrian refugees are in trouble. Most likely they're not, quote unquote, bad people. The actions of a few cannot represent the actions of the group. If that were the case, I have three or four ethnicities in my blood right now that are monstrous. Mexicans are awesome. The irony of the Mexican situation is they are everything the right claims to like. They're Christian. They're family oriented. They're hardworking. You know, they come here for a better life. They're the American dream. You can't be mad at that. But like, I can only get to that place when I know why I'm scared of them, because I'm not rich. I'm rich enough to understand them. I'm rich enough where I have had gardeners. Like, I have had Mexican labor, and I know the draw to that, how enticing that is, because a lot of these rich people that are just railing against Trump, they want their slaves. And I know that sounds shocking, but it's true. They want their $4 or $5 an hour desperate people to work for them for pennies to raise their children. They're slave. It's slavery. And a lot of these businesses in Los Angeles that I would even work at when I first started comedy, these restaurants and stuff, they would have whole families of Mexicans working there under the table for pennies on the dollar. And is that being liberal? Is that progressive? Or is that being a modern slave owner? I mean, that's the question. You know, when the country is split between seeing Mexicans as servants and seeing Mexicans as competition, I honestly see Mexicans as like drinking buddies and like friends and people that I can learn from and write jokes from. But I understand you can't understand any side you have until you understand the other one, or else you're a blind coyote jumping on noise. As the great Doug Stanhope once said about Hollywood, just a blind coyote jumping at noise. And that's why my party is the party party. Like, there's the Democratic Party, there's the Republican Party, and then there's the party party. And my brother's my vice president, and my wife is the first lady, and Jean-Claude Van Damme is my, secretary of defense. It's going to be great. And then the party, party, party. That's when the party, party has a party. The party, party, party. So I want you to vote for me this November. So that's going to be it. I'm not going to do a long, drawn-out one today. But subscribe, comment, rate. Tell me what you think. Email me, whydidn'tthelaugh@gmail.com. And watch South Park. It's phenomenal. It's the greatest satire ever made. And I'm a big Jonathan Swift fan. And Mark Twain, and I'm a big fan of satire going all the way back, you know. And this is I don't know any that's better and more prolific than South Park. They just take society and they just show it to you. And they just say this is our Dark Mirror. Another great. That's like the dramatic version. It's on Netflix. Dark Mirror or Black Mirror. It's society basically just reflected upon itself, and you learn from that. And it's like Eric Cartman's part this season is so funny. Like, he's so stoic. Yeah, and check out Case Closed, Beers Open. We're almost done with our newest episode called The Mystery of the Thousand Step Night, where our buddy tells us that he wakes up and his Fitbit tells him he walked 100,000 steps and he doesn't know where he went. It's going to be really, really awesome. And the dude's name is Kaepernick. We've called him Kaepernick since way before the Kaepernick thing, because he's chiseled and he's got tattoos and he's fucking tan and he was a captain in the military. So it was Cap or Kaepernick. We call him Kaepernick. And so that's his name in the plot line, but it has absolutely nothing to do with the kneeling Kaepernick. We don't address any politics or any of that shit in the Case Closed, Beers Open. And I will be at Cleveland Improv this coming up weekend, and then the LPCA in Lake Placid, October 15th. And then the following weekend, I will be at the Punchline in Atlanta. So get tickets at hugepianist.com and spread this around. Show this to people. Because good shit doesn't seem to go viral that easily. And I don't like virality, but long-form virality is good, because assholes don't really take the time to listen. But I want this message to get out there, like, because life is starting to suck, and it doesn't have to, and it will go back. So spread this around, share it, and stay hydrated. Much love, everyone.
Hey, what up, peeps? It's Jessie Mae Peluso here to tell you about my podcast, The Sharp Tongue, heard each week right here on the Sideshow Network. Every episode is a slice of my life as a touring comedian, and I'm bringing you my favorite funny and interesting friends to talk about whatever is on our minds. I talk about road stories, I talk about horror movies, music, putting fingers in buttholes. Everything you ever want to talk about is right here. It's A Sharp Tongue with me, Jessie Mae Peluso, every week on iTunes and the Sideshow Network. Download, rate, and subscribe, and tell a friend to check us out, because we need validation. And by we, I mean me. I'm alone here in the studio.